So welcome to this episode of Revy Study Go. We have Kyla Sorensen. Is it Sorensen?
It is.
With us. Kyla has very kindly made it all the way to Norwich Cathedral. So we are in, it's autumn, but it's a beautiful sunny day. We're sitting in the cloisters by the labyrinth, and we're going to explore some thoughts about rural ministry and life out in Gaywood, where Kyla lives and ministers and works, all the same thing, I guess, as a vicar.
Where we move and have our being.
Yeah. So thanks for being here, Kyla. I suppose the first thing would be just to tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you become a vicar? Were you born that way?
I think I probably was. I can remember as a really young girl, like 7 or 8 years old, being in church. And that was in London at St George's Church, which is still an SSC parish, so a forward in faith parish. And I can remember sitting right at the front of the church, looking up this enormous great barn of a building, a bit like St Faith's is now, and knowing that I was part of something, not really knowing what that meant, and knowing that it felt bigger than me, but that I was a part of it. And of course, at that time, girls weren't allowed up the front.
Yeah.
It was in the 70s, in the early 70s. But I knew
When did that change? What was the year that...
94, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. I was already at university at that point.
Amazing.
I'd gone off on a different trajectory somewhat.
Did you have that sense of call when you were at university?
No, I didn't. I spent a lot of time exploring at university. So, you know, belonging to the Christian Union, all the interfaith stuff, that kind of thing, really exploring what faith meant.
Yeah.
And what it meant to me. And how other faiths could give my own faith, my own beliefs, some kind of texture and depth by understanding how other people related to their faith.
Yeah.
And I carried that on through into my 30s, really, when working and moving around and doing all kinds of different jobs. But my faith is what kept me anchored all the way through.
All right. So you grew up in London?
I grew up in London.
And you had a childlike faith.
I had a childlike faith when I was a child, but when I got to my teens, I really felt I could push against it.
Yeah.
So my faith moved with me, which I can't really articulate in a special way, just that I was able to really push and really dig deep. What I didn't really understand in those days was the importance of church family. So my faith was very much all about me and my individuality and how I related to God, but not with my wider church family. So I'd often go to church on Sunday, do the Sunday service, go to worship at another time, but not join in with any of the activities.
Yep.
Not really get involved with church life. It was still a little bit uncool at that point.
When did it become cool at any particular point?
I think not till I was in my 30s. You said, well, sometimes you have to go away and come back, don't you?
Yeah.
But I think if I'd known back then what I know now about the importance of church family, I think some of the more traumatic events of my teenage years would have been easier because I would have had people around me that could have supported me in a different way. My family were very supportive, but it's always lovely to have a whole army of prayer warriors around you, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Did you go to university?
I did. I went to university in Canterbury
and
also in Pavia in Italy.
Oh, wow.
And read languages, French and Italian.
And after that, you ended up working?
I ended up working, first of all, at the Italian government in London. I did that for a few years and then worked for a newspaper, an aviation newspaper, because I come from an aviation family. And then ended up working across in the States, in and around the States, for various different aviation companies.
Amazing. And you're involved in aviation still, to some degree.
I'm an air... Yes, you picked up on that very well. I'm an air cadets chaplain.
Yeah.
And for the 42F squadron in King's Lynn. A quick plug there for our boys and girls.
What does that involve?
It involves me pitching up whenever I can and spending time with the youth. And it is always a joy. We have a really big squadron of ages 12 and up.
Wow.
And it is, I always come away with my face and my sides hurting with laughter because we have so much fun. But they're so earnest at that age. And I feel that I get a lot more from it than I give. I always come away feeling full of joy, really. Our young people
inspiring.
Have so much to teach us.
Yeah.
And even they might come from the most difficult background, but they come and they're all equal and they work together and they find ways to work together. That is really inspiring.
So they're natural kind of collaborators, do you think, young people?
They are. I don't think they are when they arrive.
Right.
When we look at our brand new recruits, they're not necessarily understanding what it means to be part of a team or how they work well together. But they are really encouraged and enabled and equipped, really.
Is there a sort of agility inbuilt into young people? Is this, do you think that happens with adults, or do you think they're a bit harder to adapt if you get more together?
Do you mean, do we all fear change?
Possibly.
Yes, I think we do. Yeah, I think sometimes society can crush that out of us a little bit if we're not careful. And we all like what we like and how things are and how they make us feel, how it makes us feel comfortable.
Yeah. And on that note, talking about your parish, so the disclaimer is this is a podcast focused on rural ministry, and I repeatedly keep ending up in places that everywhere around Norfolk is basically rural. And I normally count the number of tractors I've followed on the way to somewhere, but this time I actually didn't follow any tractors getting into Norwich City. But you are in, you're not in a rural setting, but you are quite far away from a lot of things.
Yeah, we're about an hour and a half out of Norwich on a good day, unless you get stuck behind tractors and then it could be longer. But we sit on the environs of King's Lynn. Our parish is about 21,500 people, about to get larger as everywhere is really. There's lots of building going on. But we are, there's still a sense of the village in Gaywood. So when I first arrived, people told me off because I wrote Christmas cards out to everybody and put just King's Lynn. I hadn't put Gaywood. Oh, goodness me.
No, yes.
That was a big problem. No, we are Gaywood. We're not King's Lynn. We're Gaywood.
Yeah.
Or rather Gaywood, as I was told I was had to pronounce it.
How was that?
Gaywood.
Gaywood?
Yeah.
Is that how it's pronounced?
Apparently so.
Wow.
I could be doing it wrong because I do have a London accent, but... But our people very much feel like they still have that village feel. Mm. So lots of people know lots of people.
And so unlocking... So you've seen quite a lot of change in your church since you arrived. How long have you been there?
3 years.
3 years.
Exactly.
And since then you've arrived and overseen rapid decline?
No, we've overseen a rapid increase.
Joking.
It's been marvellous. And there are, we've got lots of new families in church. And I think that's partly to do with the hospital, because the hospital have been doing some recruitment overseas, and so we get lots of our diversity has increased dramatically. And that might be because of our position, because we're near the nearest Anglican church to the hospital. But I think it's also to do with our welcome. We've been working on our welcome for many years, thinking about our language, our approach. What does that mean? What does that look like outside of church, not just inside the building?
Excellent. Well, I was going to ask, so a key for you in seeing growth in your village environment has been welcome.
Welcome.
And what does that look like in practical terms?
It's simple things, thinking about our language, for example, what we put on our posters that go outside the church, and keeping them simple, because a lot of the people that are coming through the doors now, English isn't their first language. Also having a big banner that goes up everywhere, we lug it around with us all, that has every single language on it that is connected to our church.
Wow.
And there are 21.
21 languages?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Which is amazing. And some of them are European languages. You know, my husband's Danish, so we have the Danish word for welcome. But we also have the Tamil word for welcome. We have the Welsh word for welcome. So it just means that when people come through the door, the first word they see is in their language, and they're being invited in.
That's so good.
Yeah.
And what other things have been significant for you in the last few years? If I was a new student, and I was exploring theology, and I was interested in rural ministry or ministry out on the edge of King's Lynn, but I had no idea how I might encourage change or transformation. What would you say are key keys?
That's a really hard question. I think it is to be thinking about re-evangelizing ourselves. So we have to be constantly looking at ourselves and seeing who we are and where God's calling us, and being open and honest about that. And then looking to encourage others to come along with us. So one of the key things that we try and do when somebody new comes in, regardless of where they're at, is introduce them to someone else. And I think sometimes, because we are on the edge of the diocese, it can feel like we're a lot further away than an hour and a half from Norwich. So it's up to us as leaders, lay, ordained, whoever, to think about, okay, what can we do to re-evangelize ourselves?
Yeah.
Because there is so much hope and promise in and around where we are, and we have to tell each other those stories. We are storytellers, naturally. as people, as you know, but sometimes we forget to tell ourselves the good stuff. And the good stuff doesn't have to be something enormous. It doesn't have to be a great breakthrough.
Mm.
It can just be this one really great story that happened to someone else in someone else's church, but we are celebrating that in ours too.
That's wonderful. That's very kingdom focused and encouraging, isn't it, to be able to celebrate good stuff you're seeing in loads of different contexts.
Yeah.
And
not necessarily feeling the pressure to replicate it, but just to take joy from that. Because there can be the pressure, I think, from one church to another to think about, oh, I should be doing what that person's doing, or I should be, we should have those people in our church, we should be doing this, we should. And should is the worst word ever. Mm. And it's not about that. It's about saying, well, who is God calling us to be in the place that we're in?
It's not a grace word, is it, should?
No, it's definitely not.
It's under a yoke of slavery, isn't it? Mm. Operating out of who you're called to be in and the mission that Jesus has put before you. So you seem very calm and serene, and it's lovely, and we're in a beautiful environment. It must be hard. Ministry is hard.
It is. Ministry is hard.
How do you encourage yourself? How do you keep going? What do you do to stay sane and rooted?
So my husband keeps me sane and rooted, my family, my beautiful dog. I spend a lot of time with her because I can come home even if I've had the worst day, the longest day, the hardest day, your feet hurt, your head hurts.
Mm.
You might be feeling a little bit fatigued by being compassionate. And you come home and your dog still thinks you're the best person in the world, you know?
Yeah.
But really, I suppose it's prayer. It's taking that time to stop and reminding myself that that's okay to do that.
Yeah.
Because I think to myself, I should be doing this, I should be doing more, I should be doing this. I think, actually, no, what I want to do is sit and pray and just let whatever's happened during the day just settle and then lay it all at the foot of the cross.
Amazing.
That sense of letting it go.
Yeah.
That took a long time to learn. That wasn't something that came naturally.
And how do you remind yourself? How do you practice that? Do you switch off devices or go and lock yourself in a cupboard or
sit quietly in my study? I have a little oratory at home,
right?
So I sit quietly there, shut the door. My first spiritual director taught me that, always shut the door, and then it's just me and the dog.
Shake it prayer. Off.
Yeah, and just sit. Sometimes I don't say anything at all, and reading is always a good break for me.
It's great.
I do love to read.
What do you read?
Anything and everything.
All right.
And the best thing is going into a place like Waterstones and just picking a book because I like a picture on the cover.
Yes. Do you judge a book by its cover?
Sometimes I do. I look at it and think, this feels nice. I'll buy this.
Yeah.
And I found the best authors that way because I'm not looking at anything. I'm not going in with some kind of, you know, pretense. Oh, I'm going to read something really deeply theological. I just pick something that I like the look of.
Yeah.
And I'll give it a go. I've read some real stonkers in my time, but it takes me away from all the more difficult thinking.
Yeah.
It gives me that opportunity just to step out for a while.
So you heard it here. Judge a book by its cover. It is the way to go. A few quick fire questions. These may not all be sensible. Least favourite hymn?
Oh, All Things Bed and Breakfast. But that's possibly because we do lots and lots and lots of funerals at St. Faith's, so we hear it a lot.
So it is the hymn of choice for funerals, isn't it?
It is the hymn of choice for funerals, weddings, baptisms.
Everything.
Yes.
I sort of get PTSD when people mention that hymn because I just have memories of standing in the creme, singing into a microphone, and not being able to move away from the microphone, but having to sing a solo of All Things Bright and Beautiful, of which there can be many verses sometimes. And people in front of me are not singing.
Yes.
They're crying. And I don't know if they're crying because of my singing or they're crying because of the mourning, but the whole thing is a heady experience.
You're only on verse three. There are seven verses.
I usually advise people, there are seven verses, but
you perhaps might only want four, and they say yes.
Yeah.
And then the organist is thankful.
Yes. I do think about the organist as well, often at crematoriums, so you have to perhaps play it kind of every half an hour.
Yes.
Or every day.
That and Morning Has Broken. But Morning Has Broken isn't quite as popular.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. It is a wonderful hymn, but it's sometimes too much of a good thing is still a bad thing.
It's because people can relate to it, I think, from school.
Yeah.
So people my age in their 50s can then think about what they remember at school.
Yep.
And it's also a very easy tune for people that don't sing in church normally, yep, to follow along with.
And often when we talk about, you know, what was, did the person have hobbies and particular interests? And sometimes it's like, oh, not really. Oh, they did like gardening and they loved pets. And you can see it coming towards you like a slow motion train.
Yes, you can.
So all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small. Okay, moving on. Sorry, tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Yeah.
Decaf.
Decaf, all day?
Yes, lavazza.
Nice. Italian.
Always.
That link. Funniest thing that's happened during a service?
Oh, I can't possibly tell you that. I'd like to write a book about it. I'm sure Richard Coles probably has already.
Yeah.
No, it's far too rude. But I can tell you something really sweet.
Go on.
That happened recently.
That'd be great.
We had our... So I'm one of the squirrels leaders in our local little squirrel dray.
Squirrels being...
Squirrels being the baby scouts.
Baby scouts.
Real baby ones.
Yeah.
So they're 4 and 5 and 6.
Go scouts, cubs...
Squirrels, beavers, cubs, scouts.
Squirrels, beavers, cubs, scouts.
Yeah. So they're the little, little ones.
Yeah.
And so we've just had celebrated a year. So we brought them all into church and I let them run amok. It was fabulous. Their leaders were trying to keep them all under wraps, but I wasn't having any of it. They should explore the building as much as they can. They were having a great time. And then I decided I was going to get them all to light a candle and put it on the votive stand and have to pray for someone. But they weren't allowed to pray for themselves. They had to pray for someone else.
Okay.
So we'd got these lit candles, terrified squirrel leaders. We were being very, very careful. And I'd gone through and asked all of these different children what they wanted to vote to pray for. And they were saying themselves, their mum, their dad, their dog, their teacher. And one of the little boys came up to me and he said, "This is my candle for prayer." So he lit it. And I said, "Have you got your prayer in your head? Have you got it in your heart?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "You're going to tell me who you're praying for?" And he looked at me and he said, "I'm praying for you."
Oh,
and I just cried.
That's so sweet. Oh, no.
I know. No, beautiful.
Oh, in a good way.
Yeah,
not
it cries in a good way.
Breakdown way.
But yeah, for a moment, he just looked at me as if to say, "What are you doing? I said I'm praying for you and now you're crying."
Oh, that's
and
so
I said
sweet.
To him, "Oh, these are really happy tears."
Yeah.
Because it was just so beautiful. He looked straight into my face and said, "I am praying for you."
Oh, that's powerful.
It really was.
Oh, that's really so was. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. So if your church had a motto, a neon sign on the front of your building, what would it say?
Flourishing together. That is at the strap line on our new church logo. And it came because we are an Anglican-Methodist partnership. So we like to think, and we've been going for 50 years now as a partnership, so we are both and we are all of those things. So flourishing together means that we are flourishing together as a church, but we are also looking to flourish together with our community.
Excellent. Okay. Kyla, we've got a special challenge that we're doing with everybody, which is just to name as quickly as you can the parishes in your benefice. Okay, so I'm going to say ready, steady, go, and then I'm going to start the stopwatch. Ready, steady, go.
Gaywood St. Faith.
Okay, it's 0.71 of a second.
I feel a bit guilty because we do only have one. It is a big parish, but we only have one church.
Well, you've won. I can't see anyone beating you. But that you have 21,000 people in your parish. So that is a lot going around. Do you have lots of other things going on? Is most of the ministry in your church or is it outside of the church in different kind of places?
It's outside of the church in different areas. At the moment, we have 3 very large estates in Gaywood. And so we are looking at the moment to doing lots of things with youth in particular, actually out on the estates.
Great.
We also have a community hub, which is on our campus, but it's separate from church. And that is used very much as a place where people come to meet for mental health groups, for knit and natter, all of those kind of things. But where people wouldn't necessarily come over the threshold into a church building, they will come into the hub or into our church rooms for an event.
Excellent.
And that gives us the opportunity then just to show witness of God's love. We don't even really have to speak about Jesus. We just have to show that love and get alongside people. And the love and the witness speaks for itself, really.
That's one of my favorite quotes is, the Bishop of Carthage in 250-something AD said, "We don't speak amazing things, we live them."
Wow.
Yeah, that's like your church.
Yeah.
Well, also you speak them too, but...
I'm going to steal that and
I'll
use
send
it in
you
a,
the
yeah,
quote.
Yeah, thank you, yeah.
And talking of inspiration, who's your inspiration? What got you into ministry or...
St. Francis, really. That whole idea that everything points to God.
Yep.
Struck me at a really young age. I don't know that I've developed anything more deeply theological than that, really, in that I'm just constantly looking at where God is in things. Even in the worst times of my life, and people say to me, "That shouldn't have happened to you. Why did that happen to you? You're a Christian. You're a priest. Why, that shouldn't happen to you." Where was God? I said, okay, God was in there leading me out. That's where God was. He was alongside me, weeping while I was weeping. Everything I see and do, all my interactions, I try to look to God. I don't succeed because I'm only human, but that's my inspiration.
Amazing. So I'm curious about faith. I live somewhere near Gaywood.
Yes.
What would you say to me?
Come in. Come and visit us.
Excellent.
Come and meet some of our people. I'd probably start you off with a coffee morning. Why don't you come and visit? There's good cake.
Great.
There's stalls, there's people, there's books, there's chit-chat. Come and meet some of our folk and see what you think.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time.
You're very
Thanks
welcome.
Thanks for sharing. And we look forward to hearing more about Gaywood. And we'll see you in the pews.